Because design is not about pretty pictures and fonts. Design is about solving a problem, and when done right, can make you one of the most powerful companies on the planet.
Hello, and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the co-founder and CEO at ProcurementExpress.com, where we take the hassle out of managing your company's spend with magical features. And this week, thanks to the magic of Twitter, I managed to connect with Pete Senna, who I've got on the podcast today to parse out a little bit more the case for investing in design, even when it's a downturn. Many finance leaders have requests for investment in marketing and sales and design at a time when things are getting tighter, but we may or may not feel comfortable, be qualified enough to know whether those decisions are good or not. So Pete is going to parse out some of the vagaries of what design and marketing and all that voodoo really means, so you can get a better idea of whether it's worth supporting cases for further investment in design in your organization. So Pete, thank you very much for coming on the Gross Profit Podcast. How are you today?
Doing great. Good to be here. So maybe to connect with you, James.
Yeah, maybe for people who haven't heard of you before, you could give us a little rundown of who you are, your background, and you know, why we should be listening to you.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love that. So my name's Pete Senna. I am a creative entrepreneur. I've been building various types of businesses for over 20 years. I do a lot of angel investing now in tech companies. And I started my first company when I was in my college dorm room. And it was a digital agency where I went on to build that up into a pretty large company. And now I serve as the chairman of that company. I have a great leadership team that's running and growing it every single day. And then I invest in a number of different companies. My superpower is really branding and storytelling. So just for the audience, I grew up 80s baby, cut my teeth as a designer developer. So I've been sort of tinkering with software and design since I was a little kid. Back in the day, I thought I wanted to make video games, and then I ended up getting sucked into this thing called marketing. And I just was fascinated by it. I thought it was really, really interesting that words, pictures, videos, and experiences could make a huge difference for people's bottom line. And I was able to help a lot of people over the years transform their businesses, whether it was a mom and pop in a garage or a Fortune 50 company. I've worked with both and everything in between, maybe not everything, but most of them in between. And I'm just really blessed, and I'm still having fun, still on the journey. It's definitely, I think, been a fun ride, and that's a little bit about me. So I think the thing that this audience will hopefully be able to get is I never prescribe advice that I haven't taken myself. I'm not one of those armchair quarterbacks. And ultimately what I'm here to do is just explain to people that creativity is something that's within all of us. And if we just approach things differently, we can solve problems differently.
Okay. Well, just before we get on to that, let me ask a selfish question. So my wife runs an agency. It's a digital, they do explainer videos. So they're Piehole cool. TV, and they do explainer videos. And she's very much running that company, but you managed to become the chairman of yours. What were the secrets to, I mean, I'm guessing it's a fairly service-led, it's very highly talented people who are required to run that business. But it sounds like you're in the chairman role, you're not in the day-to-day. And how did you manage to set that up for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter is there's no cheat codes or shortcuts here. I think you got to know who you are, you got to know what value you bring. And I think the mistake I made early on, I probably could have gotten into the role I'm in today a lot earlier, a lot faster. If I had to do it all over again, what I would say is there are three big things that I look for as an investor now that most agencies don't have, or most service companies don't have. The first I would say is network effects. Network effects are really, really important. What I mean by that is things that drive referrals, things that drive increased velocity in an organization. So we can go into a whole talk on that. Second thing I would say is marketplace arbitrage. What I mean by that specifically is if your wife's doing explainer videos and there are specific video AI companies that do explainer videos quickly now that have a software as a service fee, if she could become a partner there, and then every time that she recommends a client works with them, she gets a percentage of that. Those would be an example of marketplace arbitrage, because now she's able to take her expertise, get paid for it, Maybe not all of her clients can afford a done-for-you service. So maybe she either launches a product that does that or she refers somebody out to a product that does that. I have friends of mine that, you know, make $100,000 a month off of HubSpot referral fees, you know, just by putting people on HubSpot or tools like that. So that's where I think that early on, digging into that marketplace arbitrage is important. Understanding that the value you deliver is not always the work you do, but sometimes the knowledge you bring to the table. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is limited customization. I think the problem with services companies, whether you're a law firm, an architect firm, or a web design company, which is how I started out, you end up doing things, making your clients happy, and then you want to keep making the clients happy, and they trust you, so then they ask you for more things. And I think the biggest mistake that I made was that when the clients are like, oh, do you also do this? We'd be like, no, not really. And they're like, well, can you do it for us? And we'd be like, okay, we'll figure it out. And then what ends up happening is before you know it, the very singular focused thing that you started the company to do is now, you know, 15 feet wide and 2 inches deep. And that's where I think that we went through a very hard time years ago where we got so wide and so shallow and we were doing so many different things that ultimately, I just see that a lot with companies. The growth slowed down because it becomes very difficult. My co-founder used to say, the hunter that chases two rabbits catches none. And I think that focus is something that's really, really important. So that thing I would say to your wife is, what's the one thing that their company, her company does better than anybody else? Double down on that and then figure out how to lean into those three principles of what are my network effects I can plug into? You know, number one, can she train people on how to make explainer videos? And then she has a whole training marketplace of people that does it. And now she lowers her labor costs and increases that. That's an example of network effects. Second is marketplace arbitrage. What tools, technologies does she use? Is she using video stock content from Artlist or Shutterstock that's royalty free? Can she start to pay and create custom things like that and then resell some of her assets on those marketplaces for a fee? Now there you go. And now you've got marketplace arbitrage, right? A lot of marketplaces, you know, the biggest companies in the world typically don't own the assets. They typically own the market. Amazon, you know, Airbnb, Uber, like look at this, right? Uber doesn't own any cars, right? So that's a good example. And the last thing is limited customization. Know what you do, know what you're best at, and don't feel like your company has to do everything for everyone because then you're nothing to no one. So those are the three things. How I got to the chairman role now is I recognized in my career that there was a couple of things I did really well. And there's a lot of things that I thought I did really well, but it was really just my ego in the way. And when I stepped aside from that, I managed to bring in people that were smarter than me, better than me, and more focused than me in certain areas. And that's where the company really started to grow in a way that I'm proud of. And ultimately, I think what that gets back to is what we're here to talk about today, which is this idea of design, right? And me sort of shifting the mindset of people in terms of what design means. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so design, let's talk about that. So let's ask for a really obvious question. I mean, I'm in finance. I pay the bills, but I get these very big bills sometimes for like design consultants or design in general. Not really sure exactly what it is. So assume I'm an idiot. I don't know how difficult that would be for you to imagine that at this moment. Assume I'm an idiot and tell me, like, what is design?
So I think design is a solution to a problem is the way that I would say it. The one thing that I would say is, let me answer it with a story because we all remember stories. So the audience and you might know about a company that's a little over 100, I think it's 112 years old today. And then that company is called IBM. Have you ever heard of them?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, IBM's market capitalization today is a little over $133 billion. And again, we're recording this in September, 2023, just for the folks listening. And one of my favorite quotes was from Thomas Watson Jr., which was the former CEO of IBM. And again, IBM is not particularly known in this audience's mind for things like design, because most people think design is pretty pictures and fonts, and they're actually wrong. So what Thomas Watson said was, good design is good business. And I love that quote because I think that good design is good business. And if you're looking at design any other way, either one, you don't understand it, or B, the people that you're paying to do it don't understand it. Because design is not about pretty pictures and fonts. Design is about solving a problem, and when done right, can make you one of the most powerful companies on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Jason Cullen, who's a sort of software influencer, and he gave a very famous talk in 2013 about, the attributes of an ideal bootstrap SaaS business. And he kind of, in a way, designed what it should be. He said, listen, you sell to the finance team, it should be a recurring problem. It should be, a problem that could be solved with software. And it went on, but he came up with the attributes. And then, many people, including us, tried to fold our business into that design. We said, okay, well, that's what we want as the outcome. And that's how we ended up with our business. And it's a good way to think about that. So, but what's the, is the case, like, is there a case for design? Like, is it really worth the money? Let's put it that way.
I think that's a subjective question. I think the objective question is yes, it's worth the money. If you know what problem you're solving, it's absolutely worth the money. But when you say design of what, right? Like, if you're a $100 million company and you don't have a sales problem and you don't have a product problem and people know who you are, but your CEO thinks the logo is ugly, is it worth investing in a logo redesign? And you already have brand equity? No, it's not. But if you have a vision for the company and you have a set of values and you have a set of growth goals and they're all working together, then great. But if all of a sudden you were known for one thing and you want to be known for something new now, it might make sense and be time for you to rebrand. But I think the problem with design is that there's so many ways to approach design, right? I know some of the best designers I know. If you looked at one of their PowerPoints, you would need to like wash your eyes because it's just like they don't know what they're doing for visual design perspective, but they know how to design systems and processes and organizations that will be transformative. So I think the first thing we have to do is to understand like when we say design, what do we mean? Because it's a word that means a lot of things to a lot of people. So is design a worthy investment in a company? Absolutely. Depending on the company and the problems that they're facing, the type of design that they need is entirely different. If you're a consumer packaged goods company and no one's buying the packaging on shelf in the store when they walk by it, maybe you have a packaging problems. In that case, you might need a package designer, right? If people are buying the product, but then they don't buy it again because the product, changes their hair color in a not good way, and people are complaining about it online, well, then you have a product design problem. If you have a web application or a SaaS company, and people are really confused on how to use your tool or product, then you might have a UI or UX problem. If you're a finance manager and your junior financial analysts keep making mistakes, maybe you have a dashboard design problem, or a financial instrument design problem. So I think design in itself, as I mentioned, is not just what it looks like or feels like. That's a famous Steve Jobs quote. Like he said, design is not what it looks like and feels like. Design is just how it works, right? Or design is how it works, I think is what he said. That's how I think about design. So what kind of design are we talking about here today, James?
Well, let's talk about problems. So what class of problem is well solved by design? Maybe you can think of some problems with startup people. Like, how would you know? Like, let's say I have a problem, let's think what problem I have. Okay, well, our business, everyone wants more leads. Let's say a very common one, right? So it's the most generic one. So the problem is you want more leads. How would you know? How would I know to go just put some money into Google versus come to a design company to help me solve that problem?
Well, the first thing I would say is this is more of a design strategy problem that you're describing. So let's unpack that. So would you mind indulging me in the audience for a moment where we could sort of work through this problem together?
Sure.
Perfect. So why do you need more leads?
Well, we have a growth target. So by, 2025, we want to be at a certain top line revenue, and then we need an extra 20% in growth to hit that. So we need to actually, by default, we're going to be 20% off that target, and there's a gap.
Why do you need to create a 20% improvement?
Well, there's a couple of things there. I mean, our goal is to build a bulletproof company. So that's the aim. All our staff is about 100 people who they're rely on Procurement Express to, make their way in the world in one way or another. And there's thousands of people using the software every day who I like to think go home 10 minutes earlier because we're around. They help to manage their spend a bit better. They reduce to mistakes. Everyone gets to get in and out of the office quicker. That's our dent in the universe, if you like to quote Steve Jobs. And the reason we're doing it is because A, in truth, we've been successful, but we need a target to grow so we can all be aligned and clear on what we're doing. And that feeling of achieving together, basically to win, right? Winning is fun. And we've set this target of what we defined as winning. And if we do it as a team, you know, it helps us stay focused and it means that we're a healthy, growing company, which is all we ever want to be, right? Healthy, growing company.
Why do companies need Procurement Express?
They need Procurement Express because they need to buy things to do their job. They need to buy a bucket of paint, or they need to buy hire a voiceover, or get a sprocket for a wind farm. And to buy those things, they need to coordinate as a team. So it's not just a person in the field who needs to paint the fence. It's the finance team that needs to know why the paint was bought so they can pay them correctly. And all those people need to collaborate together. So in order for them to do their job, they need to buy things. And we take the hassle out of what can be an arduous process. You know, if you've worked in a bigger company, you have to buy something. You might have heard of something terrifying called a purchase order, which no one sends a shiver down everyone's spine, salespeople and people trying to buy. And that's because it's a very clunky, arduous process to collaborate properly to make purchases. We magic away all that. So it's just a magical experience, much more fun, much more engaging. It's way quicker. Everyone goes home early.
Why is it quicker and more magical when you work with Procurement Express?
Well, it comes down to communication. So we have apps, we have user-friendly apps, which are fun to use, have a little delightful experiences when you use them, and they remove all the communication mistakes together. So it means that something that used to take you maybe an hour to do, like organizing, purchasing that bucket of paint, takes you 30 seconds. And when you realize that you've just got an extra hour in your day, that's a magical feeling. And that's why people buy our software compared to alternates which are traditional ERPs or bigger software, which do a million things and do millions of things. And they do all those millions of things very well, which means they just don't make the purchasing experience a lot of fun. It's arduous because it's just one of 100 things they do, where we're kind of a best of breed solution for helping your staff to purchase quickly.
Why aren't more people buying Procurement Express then, if it's such a great thing?
Well, one thing is, I mean, the traditional solution is either a spreadsheet or an ERP. And there's not a ton of awareness that, you know, there's a middle way. A lot of people feel like I'm either going to manage everything in a spreadsheet and I'm going to take phone calls all day from people who are interested in buying stuff, or I'm going to spend X hundreds of thousands of dollars with SAP or any of those fine companies out there. And they just know that the second option isn't a choice for them, so they put up with the first.
Okay. So for the audience, just being respectful over his time. So the reason I was holding my fingers up is I was basically taking James through a five whys exercise. And I would continue to go deeper and deeper and deeper with James. But just from the limited conversation I had here with James, and I don't know anything else about his business outside of what he's told you and me on this conversation, what I know to be true right now is that there's a value prop hiding in there. And what I'm hearing from James is that he wants to create additional customers. And what he described to me is that he wants more leads. And actually, James doesn't want more leads, right? What James wants is more customers, because more customers using Procurement Express means that James's company is going to grow and that his 100-person team is going to be happier and healthier as a result of it. So the problem is not that James needs more leads. The problem is that James needs additional revenue in the form of a customer base that's going to help him to grow Procurement Express as he sees it. So the first thing I would understand and I'd want to know is, where are the existing customers that Procurement Express has? How did you get them? Friends, family, introductions, old business colleagues. I'd want to unpack that. And I want to talk to James's best five customers. And I'd want to survey them and say, how would you feel if tomorrow Procurement Express didn't exist? Would you be very unhappy, or would you be like neutral? I'd want to know that answer. And then I'd want to know why. And then I'd want to know, what was their world like before Procurement Express? What's their world like after Procurement Express? And then what I would probably do is do something we call brand DNA, which is to help Procurement Express understand what is the essence of the brand, the story they're telling. Your story is your strategy. What is the expression of that? How does that come to life? And then what is the ecosystem on all the ways that that works? And what we might find out is that James doesn't actually need to do more marketing and more sales. What we might find out is that James has some of his best customers already, And those customers go to conferences, and those conferences, they might have friends, and at the bar, they might be drinking and bitching about their, about Concord and SAP and all these things. They're fat, they're slow, they're ugly. No one ever got fired for hiring SAP, right? Or IBM. But what we might find out is that Procurement Express is a faster, better, cheaper, more gratuitous experience. And it's something that you can trust because one of your best mates said that you can trust it and they're using it. So really then what we might be able to do to get that 20% lift for James and his company is you might be able to just do a really smart referral program that creates an incentive structure for James's existing customer base that helps them in the form of procurement people love to save money. So if you can get every one of those procurement people to save a little bit money annually off of Procurement Express by simply introducing them to more people who use Procurement Express, James might not have a sales and marketing problem. James might have a referral problem. So this is where I think you can see in just 5 minutes how going through a design exercise, and this is just a quick example, I've never met James outside of today. This is the kind of work that we do as designers to help shape the ecosystem and to understand there. Then from there, what I want to do, folks, is that I want to understand what are all the things that are working, right? So I'm going to make a fake number. Let's say James's revenue right now is $10 million a year, okay? And let's say James tells me he wants to get to $12 million a year, right? To jump up by 2 million. What I want to understand is everything that James did and the James's company did to get to $10 million, all the things that are working well. And then I want to do a start, stop, and continue exercise to understand sometimes it's not about doing more things. It's about doing the things you're already doing better. That's a design problem. And that might be as simple as literally a landing page for James that succinctly articulates what that magic is for Procurement Express. And then finding a way to get the right people in front of that. And that might not be sales and marketing. That might be a direct email that James can send or James's customers that love him can send to other people in a very simple DM message. And that DM message could live in an email. It could live in a text message. It could live on Instagram. It could live on LinkedIn. It could live on some other portal that people spend a lot of time on. That's how I think we can solve a problem for James's business. And I hope that's helpful, James, not just for the audience in terms of how we think about design, but I hope it's helpful for you to sort of go back to your team and start figuring out what's working well and how do we do more of that, as opposed to going out and saying, you know what, we've got a leads problem. If you have a leads problem, and we can talk about that separately, but if you have a leads problem, I'd want to know why you have a leads problem. And I want to go deeper and I want to play the five whys game on that thing as well and understand what the customer journey looks like. Because at the end of the day, you know what, the procurement person might not trust a Google ad. Because I don't know about you guys, but how many times do you see an ad that you're just like, I'm so sick and tired of these people I don't know. But what if James did something like, here's the top 20 ways that you can save your company 20% in your procurement process. Let me first get that in front of the people. Let me get them to download that as a lead magnet. Let me get them to consume that and offer real value. And at the end of that, no sales. Don't buy Procurement Express today. Call to action. No. At the end of that, wait a couple days, send a follow-up email. Thanks so much for downloading our 20 top percent procurement thing. Tell us a little bit, did this help solve some of your problems? We'd love to hear from you. No sales, no ask. Now I know who you are. Now I'm starting to trust you because you're not jamming your product down my throat like everybody else does. You know, get rich quick and save your game. That shit does not work anymore. And then after that, what's the value you offer? And then they write back and they say, you know what, this is great. And not, hey, here's a link to a call. Click my Calendly and book a HubSpot meeting. No. How are you doing? And then maybe one of your salespeople or somebody follows up and says, did this help you? Yeah, this really helped. Thanks so much. Okay, great. Are there any other things that we didn't cover in this white paper that you think would have been helpful for you? A human response, not an AI chatbot response. And at scale, you can automate that. But I always say, like Paul Graham, the famous startup guy says, do things that don't scale. And then all of a sudden, the conversation happens, and let's just call him Susan. Susan works for James. I'm making this up. And now Susan responds back to an email, and the person says, hey, Susan, thanks for reaching out. The one thing that you didn't cover is how I can automatically tag and classify my expenses. We're currently using ramp.com for auto expense classification, or we're currently using Abacus for expense classification, and it's really annoying to reconcile that with this other department. And then Susan responds and says, oh, thank you so much, John. If we could figure out a way to save you an hour a day on tagging and classification, would that be worth 30 minutes of your time to have a conversation? Not book my meeting now, but that's the thing. It is a little bit extra work for Susan to do that. Yes, it is. But I can tell you with extreme confidence that your close rate will demonstrably increase because people are sick and tired of their inbox. Right now, I have an executive assistant. He processes and removes somewhere between 300 to 400 emails a day of vendors that are cold pitching me on email and cold pitching me on LinkedIn. I don't read them. I don't open them. I don't respond to any of them. But you know what I do respond to? A thoughtful LinkedIn message that is not just, hey, I'd love to connect with you and be part of your network, Pete. But it's like, hey, Pete, I read your last two articles and I checked out your podcast. It seems like you really care about this topic right now, which is launching cool explainer videos for your clients. I see that you've worked in a couple of categories. Did you know that we offer explainer videos? Can you give me an opportunity to just show you a couple of them? Maybe give you like a free 5-second one just to give you a taste. Would you be willing to send that to your client then? Sure, no problem. Now your wife's company just got another lead. But if your wife's company hired some lead gen house and she sent 1,000 emails to people like, need explainer videos? If I Google in my inbox right now, James, I literally promise you, and I'll do it on the phone, there's 100 things in the past 60 days of people trying to sell me explainer videos, and I've responded to 0 of them. Now, they all have leads problems, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And it's interesting because I think what you've just gone through there gives an example of what we showed, we didn't tell, right? So what I really heard, Pete, and I wonder if you'd agree with me here, is someone maybe needs to consider someone like yourselves or a design company, if there's a problem you're just banging your head against and you need a new perspective on it, right? And that's a problem, and that problem could be leads or staff or anything, but like the problem is, it's the problem maybe you've had for 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years. It's not changed, and something needs to, now it's time to change, and now maybe it's time to talk to Pete or maybe our digital surgeons.
Maybe what I would say is, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Sure. Yeah. So thank you very much, Pete, for coming along today. Maybe you'd just like to tell people how they can reach out to you, or what's the best way to hear more, get more of your insights.
Yeah. So no, I appreciate it. And this is fun. Again, I appreciate you indulging me a little bit for this, and I appreciate the audience for listening to me wonk on. I'm really passionate about this stuff, and I write about it. I have a free newsletter on my website, PeteSena.com. I'm not going to try to sell you anything. It's I basically just take the most interesting things that I see, and twice a month on Friday mornings, I send out an email that's got some cool links. Recently, I've been covering a lot of things on like automation and how to automate your business with AI. So when I find a cool tool that saves me time or money, I'll write about it or I'll talk about it. Oftentimes I'll see things that inspire me creatively. I'll draw different metaphors, from different places, and I'll add that in the newsletter. So I call that the Forward Obsessed Founder. So that's a good place for people to tune into me. And then I think if folks have questions, I love designing in the open. And what I mean by that specifically is, whether it's on LinkedIn or on Twitter, and I'm just Pete Sena on both those platforms. If you've got a question, you know, just post that question publicly. One of the things that's nice is I don't charge for publicly answering questions, right? I do charge quite a bit for private sessions and that sort of thing. But I think if you post a question publicly, that would be helpful. I'd be more than happy to point you to somewhere that might be a good answer for you, or maybe introduce you to somebody who can help you solve that problem. And shit, maybe I can help you solve that problem. I don't know. So that's just the best place for folks to tune in.
Great. Thanks, Pete. And in the next episode of the Gross Profit Podcast,